It's a new year and someone has a new console they're itching to talk about. Welcome to the Thirsty Mage, the RPG podcast that never shies away from an opportunity to discover more cool video games. This week, we're all about Xbox as we trawl the Game Pass oceans in search of buried treasure. Joining me this episode is a man who's been trawling used video game stores for his own buried retro treasure. It's David Lloyd.
Yes, it's been a retro Christmas for me. If I'm not deep diving on digital storefronts, I'm going through all of the old cartridges, old boxes of any retro store that I happen to be within a 30-kilometer radius of.
My favorite thing is that you're kind of bringing us Game Boy titles in particular, and I'm like, oh, this is a perfect opportunity. If I have the cartridge, I can throw it in my Game Boy Pocket, analog pocket. Jeez, I wish I had a Game Boy Pocket. But yeah, it's been fun to see, like, you know, which cartridges you pick up, or you make a trip to the used video game store and you do have something cool to show us, whether it's a game we've played before or not. And that was kind of, I think, one of the reasons why we did the Minish Cap episode, right? This is an opportunity for us to go back to some old games once you find the physical copies that you've been collecting.
Yeah, I had a good chuckle about Golden Sun being added to NSO.
That's right, yes, yes.
Because it must have been a couple years ago at this point. I've had a Golden Sun GBA cartridge just kicking around the house for forever. I probably played 30 minutes of it and then got distracted by something else and forgot I owned it.
Yeah.
And now that I've been on my GBA kick, I've got it out. I haven't played it yet because I'm still playing through Fire Red and hoping to finish that soon. I don't know. It might be something that comes up soon. I might have to give it a go.
Yeah, I mean, it's that perfect storm of you already having the cartridge, you're picking it up somewhat recently, and then it coming to a digital service that more of us on the podcast and the audience members as well can download it for themselves. So I think Golden Sun episode is probably in the cards. It's also a series that we haven't really talked about before, and I'm sure there are fans, listeners out there who enjoy that series. So nice to get the first two GBA games. I've never played the second one. I've probably played a handful of hours of the first, and like you, just got distracted by something. I never owned either game or the DS game, but it'll be fun to get into a series that I know has a lot of dedicated fans and people who have been looking forward to another game for so many years that are still waiting, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, no, not a Game Boy centered episode for us this week, although there will be a little bit of kind of connection with Game Boy by the end of the episode. But we're talking about Game Pass this week. I got an Xbox Series X around Christmas time, traded in some games. There were some decent promotions on Xbox consoles. I think in North America as a whole, but in Canada, the discount was pretty steep. So it felt like a good time to jump in. Just a funny aside, I literally bought a Series S from a friend who was selling one. I think he has an X already. And we were actually playing together last night, but we'll talk about that game another time. And so I bought the Series S. I'm like, okay, you know, this seems like a good time to jump in. But then right after I bought the Series S from him, a used version, the Series X got this big discount, you know, about $130 off. So it was down to $499 Canadian. And I'm thinking, you know, I always wanted the Series X instead. And GameStop had a bunch of decent promotions, so I traded in some games, traded in the Series S as well, and the rest is history. I've got a Series X, I've got 2 years of Game Pass loaded up, and I've been playing almost every night. It's definitely been an Xbox end of December, early January holiday for me. So yeah, really, really into Game Pass right now. I like the Xbox app on my phone. I like collecting the points for playing games. I think all of it is an ecosystem that I've been having fun spending time in. So we've got a handful of games we're going to talk about today. Some of them I've played, some just David and a couple that we've both played before. So we'll get right into it here. The first one was a game I wasn't sure I was going to play, wanted to play, but didn't want to pay full price for it. I think that's what Game Pass is going to be a really good service for, is checking out games that maybe I want to wait for, or that I'm just not 100% sure that I want to pay, you know, $40, $50, $60 for. And so the first one for me is Like a Dragon, Gaiden, The Man Who Erased His Name. This is an interlude kind of experience. It's a spin-off, I suppose. It's very similar to kind of the classic Yakuza games in that it's a brawler rather than the newer turn-based games like a Dragon and Infinite Wealth, which is coming very, very soon. So another reason why I wanted to play this first. But yeah, it's an interlude, kind of bridging the gap between Like a Dragon, which was kind of like Yakuza 7, and Infinite Wealth, the follow-up to that with Ichiban. It's also kind of a swan song or a send-off for Kiryu, who was the protagonist of Yakuza 0 through 6. The premise is that Kiryu is kind of, he's become like a secret agent almost, and changed his name, and he's not Kiryu, he's Joryu. And so the whole game, like, people are calling him Joryu, and there's also a large section of people that know it's Kiryu, and kind of just humor him, I suppose. They let him, like, oh, yeah, he's not Kiryu. He's this new person, even though he looks exactly like and fights exactly like Kiryu. One of the settings is a kind of a Vegas-like space that's on a floating barge. Has a coliseum that you fight in, a casino, a cabaret, stores. It's kind of the central hub where it's a main area where you spend about 30% of the game. There's a lot of going back and forth between the kind of Japanese neighborhood and then this barge. It takes place, I think it takes place in a section of the city that's from Like a Dragon. Ichiban's kind of stomping grounds. I don't think you get that whole city space. You get about maybe a third to half of it, something like that. But it does feel familiar. Anyone who's played Yakuza game will kind of be like, oh yeah, this is the same kind of stomping grounds I'm familiar with moving around through. You have, you know, a lot of mini games, not just on the barge, but in the city as well, from the darts, poker and blackjack, maybe mahjong is probably one of them too, but you get golf. There's also the slot car, pocket car racing, which is fun.
Home run derby? There's got to be home run derby.
Yeah, there must be. I don't remember playing it, but I know
the batting golf cages, I guess.
Would be yeah, I don't know if the, I'm not 100% sure the batting cages are there. They might be, but that's one mini game that the game doesn't directly lead you through. So I'm not 100% sure that those are present, but the golf one's fun, and you actually do that as part of the story as well. A bunch of the mini games, they come up in the story, or at the very least in the side quest. So you're exposed to them and you know they're there. Play them more if you want to. This one, rather than some more extended side quests, it features a lot of smaller tasks to do. Some of them are part of kind of the main story, almost feeling a little bit like padding, but they're so quick that it doesn't really matter. There's a girl you kind of work for that, and I'm blanking on her name right now, but she kind of like, she has like this little agency kind of helping homeless people, helping the people in the neighborhood. And so a lot of the game is kind of doing tasks for her and kind of building up her reputation. And so you're filling up meters, you're gaining money and influence points that way. And then the nice thing is kind of everything is tied to money in this game, maybe a precursor to Infinite Wealth, that all of your stat bumps, your unlocking moves, kind of all the improvements that you're doing to Joryu have to do with spending money. So it's nice. It's kind of simplified that you're not worried about like unlocking points and you know, different types of currency, I suppose, to unlock your moves. It's basically everything is tied to money. So, you know, you fight guys on the street, you're getting money. You complete a task, you're getting money. Maybe you're getting items sometimes too, but everything you do is to earn money, earn currency, and then spend that on improving your character. The kind of some of the new things in addition to the familiar kind of brawler moves that come from previous games, Joryu has these secret agent powers that are kind of fun to use. So the first one you get is it's almost like a Spider-Man web that shoots out of your hand, I guess it's a, like a wire or something like that. And you wrap up enemies and you can kind of fling them around. And it's always funny to do this. Like as you upgrade the power that this, it might be called Spider or something like that. As you upgrade this power, you're able to hook in more enemies. And so you get to a point where you're kind of lassoing four or five enemies and just tossing them around like you're wrangling a bull or something like that. It's really fun to see. You can knock enemies into each other with this move. So that was a favorite of mine. I always kind of leveled that one up first. A couple other powers. One involves you summon like drones, and the drones kind of go and like knock into the enemies or bash into them. Just doing a little bit of damage, but it's kind of funny to see, like, you know, you summon like a dozen of these little flying helicopter drones, and then they'll just seek out the enemies and start to distract them and take them down. You can summon enough that they're just kind of almost paralyzing a boss in the corner or something like that, and it takes them a while to get out of it. The third one, and I might be getting the order wrong here, you get one where you kind of like, you flick like a cigarette and it explodes, basically. It becomes like a stick of dynamite almost. That one's a little bit slow to use, and because the explosion doesn't happen right away, there's like a 2 or 3 second countdown. I didn't use that one as much. I was using all of the powers specifically to get the achievements for them, to unlock the Xbox achievements for them. But I found myself not using the cigarette dynamite that much. Why do I think? Oh, there's one more where your shoes kind of become rocket powered, like the Rocketeer or something like that, or Iron Man. And you're kind of just zipping across the screen, and you knock into enemies and it does a little bit of damage to them. I found that it's hard to control. Like you kind of blast off pretty fast, and you're zipping around so quickly that it's hard to direct Joryu at the enemies. So I didn't use that one as much. It was nice to get out of a jam sometimes, but yeah, I'm definitely using the spider power the most. Like a Dragon Gaiden. I enjoyed it. It's a shorter experience for sure. It's somewhere in the 10 to 15 hour range, as opposed to, you know, a traditional Yakuza game. Which can be 30 to 40 hours or more, depending on how much side content you want to do. I did a lot of the extra stuff. I did a lot of this. Again, there's these tasks you're doing for people in the neighborhood. There's a few more involved ones, longer kind of side quests that I did as well. They're all fun to do, and never take too much of an investment to accomplish. I liked the characters. I played with the English dub. And you know what? It's not great, but I thought it was kind of a nice way to change up the experience a little bit. So I'd say if you've never tried playing any of these games with a dub, I don't know how many of them have actually had one. It was a nice kind of change of pace to hear the English voices and not just reading the subtitles. Definitely not the way you want to experience most of these games, I think, but it was again, nice change of pace for someone who's played a lot of these games. It's definitely gotten me ready for Infinite Wealth. There are some kind of I won't you know spoil them, but there are some kind of late game connections that make it very obvious how the two games are linked, and kind of foreshadow a little bit about what Infinite Wealth is going to look like. Finally, like a Dragon Gaiden also has a demo for Infinite Wealth. I think it might have been that you have to play the game to unlock it. I think you can just unlock it anyways. Don't quote me on that. So I did unlock it at some point. But I decided not to play it just because we were so close to Infinite Wealth anyways that I was like, I don't really need a demo for that experience. I'm already committed to it. I'm going to play it at launch. And so I'm just excited for Infinite Wealth to come out. But yeah, that's like a Dragon Gaiden. The very first game that I downloaded on Game Pass, the first one I played through, and a very welcome. I knew some of the Yakuza games were on Game Pass. I didn't realize Gaiden was going to be there day one, so that was really cool. Again, it came out in November, so pretty recent game, and happy to have finished it on Game Pass.
Yeah, I'm really happy with this like Sega Atlas partnership that seems to be going on. There a lot of some of these older games, like you said, the Yakuza's on there. Personas are leaving, so if you want to get in on that, better get it there quick. But this seems like the perfect game to be on Game Pass too. Like you said, like a short experience. It will give people the ability to do that. Like you said, the it might entice people to buy Infinite Wealth on Xbox.
That's what I was thinking too. I'm like, I'm finishing this. I'm like, oh, they're not going to give you Infinite Wealth, because I was hoping that was going to be on Game Pass too. But no, they give you the kind of the game just before it that's meant to kind of whet everybody's appetite for the new one coming.
Yeah, well, and then on top of that, like the first Ichiban, like Yakuza 7, I guess, is on Game Pass as right now as well.
That's right.
So,
yeah.
Again, another, like, you've got like kind of like the games that you'd be maybe replaying right before Infinite Wealth. So they're positioning themselves well. And then even Like a Dragon Ishin is on Game Pass too. Like, it's, and that's not that old. That's only a few months, right?
Like, yeah, I want to say early 2023, maybe, right? Like that was another game that I'd wanted to play. Like, it was, man, I love all these Yakuza games coming out, and I get, you know, want to do these spin-offs and smaller games maybe to fill any gaps that exist, because it's been a couple years since the first Like a Dragon game. So yeah, seeing all these games on Game Pass is awesome. I downloaded Ishin. I may play it, but obviously that'll probably be an end of 2024 kind of thing.
If you wanted to run the gambit, they're all there. Like Yakuza Zero, Kiwami 2, 3 remastered, 4 remastered, 5 remastered, 6.
I mean, Zero is a must play. Like, I mean, we played that. We did an episode on that. Like, that's an excellent game and a great, great place to start with the series. And then if you get into it, they're all there, which is fantastic.
Yeah, I wish. I've already paid for them at this point, so I guess it doesn't matter. But like Judgment and Lost Judgment, or I wish. I don't know why they're not on Game Pass. Like, maybe I would have thought Judgment was old enough that would have ended up on Game Pass. But
yeah,
those are the two that don't seem
surprising
to be, like,
that those haven't made their way over, because they're so similar. And I don't know that there's another one coming. Maybe there is, but maybe it's just a timing thing, or maybe those are. They didn't want to dump so many kind of games of the same style all at once. So maybe those will be 2024 editions. It wouldn't surprise me in the least if those get added this year.
Yeah, maybe they wanted to keep some in the pocket or in their back pocket or something, you know?
Yeah, they can't put absolutely every single Atlas game on Game Pass all at once. You got to drip feed a little bit.
Yeah, which is unfortunate, because I take it.
Yeah, that's right. Do you want to do the next one, David?
Oh, and I'll just say one last. Soul Hackers 2 is another Atlas game that's on Game Pass that I keep telling myself I need to play it, but then just not find the time.
If you want to play it, let me know, because I every time I scroll through the shop, I'm like, I should just download this and try it, at least. Yeah. Every single time I see it, I'm like, oh, maybe.
Maybe we should make that one of our 5-hour games.
Yeah. That sounds like a really good candidate for that. Maybe we will.
Yeah. Sure, I'll skip ahead to the game I played on Game Pass, Cassette Beasts. So this was, I didn't even realize at the time that it was a Raw Fury game. So I just knew it was, basically it was kind of like a Pokemon-like. It takes kind of that idea of collecting monsters and fighting. I at the time, I also thought you were fighting, like you were using them like Pokemon, where like you were collecting them and then throwing them out to fight, but it's not exactly like that, which I'll get into in a minute. But Cassette Beast came out in May of 2023, end of May, and so I just wanted to kind of preface this with, you might only have a few months, because some of the non-Xbox games seem to only be there for about a year, so it's possible that this game will come off in May of this year, if you're looking to play it. But yeah, basically it's the premise of the game is that this character winds up on an island, like kind of wakes up almost Link's Awakening style, where you just wake up on the beach and not knowing how you got there. And then you kind of stumble towards the one town on this island where people, it's explained to the character, the main protagonist, that you know, yeah, we're just here and we don't know why, and there's no way to get off as far as we know. And so the people there have just kind of accepted it and trying to do the best they can with what they got. So, you know, there's this town that's kind of where the society's living and kind of trying to keep things as normal as possible. And then there's a bunch of characters that kind of go out in the wilderness or whatever, and you know, look for supplies or try to just kind of keep the peace or whatever. If there's problems, they go out there to figure it out. But the way it differs from Pokemon is that everything is kind of in this 80s aesthetic where you're given like a Sony Walkman, basically, from the late 80s, early 90s, where when you come across a monster, you can record them like kind of, you know, cassette style, where you hit the record button and you basically copy the monster and then you turn into the monster. And then you can kind of switch between different monsters that you have recorded on cassette tapes. So it's, instead of Pokeballs, you got cassette tapes. And yeah, it's so there's a bit of that there in that kind of style of, you know, you come across the monsters, you fight them as a monster, and then you can either record them or, well, actually you have to defeat them. Like when you record them, you're not like capturing them like the Pokemon where the fight's over, you've got the Pokemon or whatever, like you still,
yeah, that was the first thing that kind of surprised me. Like I'm like, oh, I captured it, the battle over, right? No, you still got to defeat them afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was kind of funny. I mean, early on, you have a companion that's kind of showing you the ropes. So you're fighting, there's like two characters that you fight. And then sometimes, like, you'll walk into fights where maybe there's one, maybe there's two or three enemies to dispatch or whatever. And it's also different. The battle style is different, where you have to use AP for your moves. So you'll have like your regular attack that doesn't need to use any AP, and you start the battle off with 2 AP. And then if you use that one, then, you know, you get an AP is added to your stock, I guess, when your turn comes back around. So now you have 3. So there's, you know, depending on the move, it'll utilize this AP. And so you kind of got to strategize around that, I guess, which I don't know. Like, I guess it's not, I played games where it's been that battle system and I enjoyed it. You know, things like that come to mind as like, where madness lies, when madness lies, Dev. Cosmic Star Heroine.
Was games.
Yeah, they use like an AP style.
Yeah.
Which I don't mind, but I wasn't really getting into the, like, I don't know. I wasn't feeling it in this game, like the AP style battle system. It was a little odd to me.
It's odd. I think it's odd in a Pokemon game. And I don't think that's just because, you know, we're familiar with the Pokemon battle system. It's just kind of weird that the characters, like, you see all the moves, but you might have to wait for some of your stronger moves to be available. It did feel a little bit odd, I suppose.
I think that's the difference, too, in like Cosmic Star Heroine, where, like, there is AP that you have to use and that sort of thing, but there's like 6 or 7 or 8 moves that you could use at any given time, depending on, you know, you have to recharge in that game to kind of use the move again. But
you never, at the beginning of the fight, you're not restricted from using any moves. Like, you kind of, yeah, just, maybe you choose like a lighter one or a stronger one, but I think you have enough AP to use all of your moves at the start. But this one's different. You start with 2, and if some of yours use 3 or more, then you can't use those right away. You do have to wait for them. So not being able to use all of your moves from the jump is a little bit, maybe that's what is a little bit weird or off-putting here.
Yeah, it's a little restrictive. Maybe it even makes the battles a little longer than,
yeah,
than they should be. Because
that was one of my complaints. I only played about an hour of this game, but I did notice like fights with like kind of basic enemies or just, you know, the basic monsters you could run into. I'm like, this is taking 4 or 5 turns. I'm like, with 2 characters on my team, it just seemed weird for the a little bit more lengthy.
Like at the beginning of the game, like it really shouldn't be taking more than like 2 or 3 at tops.
And, no, yeah.
And yeah, like you said, it shouldn't be restricting you to like basic attacks and for a couple turns, and then you get to use your big one. It seemed a little padded to me, but yeah. And then the art graphics wasn't exactly my cup of tea either. I would almost call it like a, what would you even call it? It was like a Minecrafty style pixel.
Yeah, it's almost like I'm thinking some of the original Pokemon games. Like, let's think about maybe like a Heart Gold, Soul Silver, or like Diamond and Pearl, like that kind of style. But then 2.5D or like a pseudo 3D. It's weird. Like, it's a weird kind of isometric almost perspective.
Yeah, it reminds me of almost Minecraft Legends. Have you played that?
Or I yeah, think it's we Legends? Have. My son and I do. We got yeah. You got that for Christmas, so we just started that one. But yeah, I that it's there for sure. It's
but like even that one looks better than this one.
Yes, I agree.
It's kind of like a hand drawn, I guess, like a hand drawn kind of boxy Minecraft look. Mm-hmm. It's really, I don't know. It wasn't my cup of tea. I wouldn't say it's bad because I'm sure there's people out there that would enjoy it, but it's just, yeah. I don't know.
It does remind a little bit of Pokemon, but it's also unique in the perspective that you have and just the way things are drawn, I suppose. Like it's Pokemon, but not. And that, yeah. I guess, works with the gameplay too. Like it's Pokemon, but not.
Yeah. And yeah, there's like rest spots where there's like a campfire where you can heal up. It's got this weird system where, so when you're the monster has its own HP, but then when your monster's defeated, then your HP starts being depleted.
Yeah.
And that's when you lose. So it's, you know, a little different there. So yeah, like it's kind of a strange game. It has those Pokemon vibes, but it does, I guess I give it respect in the sense that it's trying to do different things so that it's not just, oh, well, here's a Pokemon style game with a different cover or whatever, or a different look. It does try to differentiate itself, which is nice.
I mean, it feels a lot more adult themed, right? Like just the situation that you're in. Like you're not like a child on an adventure trying to be the best or collect them all. Like there's nothing like that. It's more like you're stranded. You want to get home. Like you don't, you're in this strange place. Everyone's like, you're not going home. And it's like, it's kind of a little traumatizing. Like, hey, I just got warped here. Like, how do I get back home? Like, you're not like, we're just living here now.
Yeah.
And even like some of the just the dialogue, there were some kind of ruffians that came to town. And then there's a boss fight that happens earlier on, like a tutorial kind of thing that sets up one of the main goals or objectives of the game. And everything that people were saying and the situation that you're in, it's not lighthearted like Pokemon is. Like it does feel a lot more serious, or the stakes are higher.
Yeah. So, and again, this is, I'm probably not going to, like, I played a few hours, but I think I'm good.
Yeah.
But this is kind of like the perfect example of Game Pass where it's like, you know what? I might have been disappointed if I had spent money to buy the game. But now that I've, you know, paid my monthly fee, like it's, I got in, I got what I wanted out of the game at this point. Now I can move on. Like, it's just it's kind of like exactly what Game Pass is intended for to a certain degree, you know?
You know, and it's funny thinking about like the purpose of Game Pass. I've been thinking about that a little bit lately when we kind of planned to do this episode. And I think it wasn't originally the plan, like people would try games on Game Pass and then buy them. Like or, you know, like they were like, oh, I like this, or I'll recommend it to people and they'll buy it, like something like that. Like I thought the idea was, at some point, this would generate more sales for them rather than just the money earned from Microsoft paying them to put it on the service. I don't know if that's still the case. I don't know if that's still an objective of Game Pass to convert to buyers, or if that's happening, if they're even thinking about that. But I think at some point, maybe when the service was pitched or when it first came out, like, I think that was one of the promises to developers or publishers, like, hey, like this will translate to sales somehow. I don't know that's the case anymore. I think, you know,
I think they've already started to transition to more, like, I think they've got this set up as like, we want to be the Netflix of video games now. Like that's the idea that I get from it.
I can't imagine with smaller games, like, and I don't know any of the specifics here. This is no like inside baseball or anything. I'm just speculating, but I wonder if it's like no longer just, oh, the Game Pass money we're giving just covers your costs, and then you need to kind of make profit on your own, you know, by converting to sales or something like that. I wonder if, like, you know, a game like Cassette Beast, which is not small, you know, we know the company behind it, but it's even smaller indie games where, like, maybe they're exclusive to Xbox. Like, if you're going exclusive to Game Pass, like, I imagine you're getting enough money to turn a profit. Like if you're kind of making that decision to only be in one place and foregoing sales on other platforms, maybe whatever money you're getting from Game Pass would be enough to make it like the game was a success financially. Yeah.
Well, it's funny, like a lot of these indie developers are like, they're getting on Game Pass. Now I don't know if it's they're getting less, but they're not having to be exclusive. Like Thirsty Suitors came out on every platform, but they were in Game Pass.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, that's so right. you pocket the Game Pass money, which probably covers most, if not all, of your development costs. But now you're also pocketing the money from the other developers, like especially indies. Like I would assume that Steam is probably going to be your number one revenue generator.
Yeah.
So if you can even get on Steam and Xbox, then that seems like the perfect combination for a lot of these indies.
And that makes sense because, I mean, there's an Xbox on PC or a Game Pass on PC as well. But yeah, you're right. Like a lot of people, like there'll be a game will be on Steam first, you know, wishlisting and, you know, getting a sense of like, you know, how popular this game is going to be, what kind of buzz and excitement is there about it. And yeah, I could see Game Pass. Playing games on Game Pass is like a trial. I'm like, oh no, I would rather play this on PC for whatever reason. You know, maybe that's on your laptop, your Steam Deck, or something like that. So trying it on Game Pass and then being like, oh yeah, okay, I am going to buy this game on Steam because I like it or I want to support the developers. I think there's a little bit more of that on PC than console, right? The idea of supporting the people who make the games you like, and maybe knowing that, oh, if I play it on Game Pass, I'm not giving them a sale, so I'll go ahead and buy it on Steam because I like this game. I want to see more from these guys, so I'll just buy it on Steam. And you know, there's so many Steam sales that you're just on average you're getting games cheaper on Steam than anywhere else, right? So
yeah. Well, and if you want to keep the game long term, like if you play it on Game Pass, love it, and then you're like, well, I want this game forever, then you're probably going to head over to Steam and pick it up or something.
Yeah, see that I haven't had an Xbox long enough to be frustrated about games leaving Game Pass. Like, yes, I see Grand Theft Auto 5, and I see the Persona games that we mentioned leaving Game Pass. You know, Persona leaving makes sense with Reload coming out, Reload also coming to Game Pass. It is a shame that 4 is leaving too. But yeah, let's move forward here. So the next game we've both played, I think you finished it too, David, The Outer Worlds.
I didn't finish it, but
okay, not quite.
Played a good chunk of it.
Yeah, that's good. So The Outer Worlds was the second game I played, maybe the first. I'm mixing that up with Like a Dragon. But yeah, The Outer Worlds is a game I'd had my eye on for a long time. And I was like, so tempted by all these sales that had happened to the game and where do I want to play it? I was probably very close to buying it on PlayStation at some point in the last 12 months. I definitely wanted to buy it on Switch, but heard, you know, that the performance and visuals weren't great. So I was like, okay, you know, this is one I want to enjoy on a more powerful console. And so not even really thinking that The Outer Worlds was on Game Pass. Like, this was just literally day one. I'm setting up my Xbox. Let's see what's on the surface. Oh, Outer Worlds. Fantastic. Of course, I'm going to download this and get to it soon. So we have Starfield, which is, you know, followed in space. And then you have The Outer Worlds, which is followed in space at home, right? That meme or that GIF where it's, you know, but we have followed in space at home and it's The Outer Worlds. I think The Outer Worlds might be the better game, and that's coming as someone who hasn't played Starfield yet, just thinking about...
I would agree with you based on the little I played Starfield.
Well, there you go. So, okay, we've got one in that column, and I will try Starfield at some point this year, and we'll see if we go two for two there on Outer Worlds maybe being the better experience. The idea, the premise is that, and David, you'll have to correct me if you can remember more than... And I kind of played so many games the last 2 weeks. The idea is that you're kind of a colonist who is frozen, like kind of cryogenically frozen in this big ship. And I can't remember the name of the ship, but this scientist, he revives you. Or they didn't have a good process for reviving people after 10 or 20 plus years of being cryogenically frozen. But this scientist kind of comes up with a method of doing that. Maybe doesn't have a very high success rate, but it works with you. And so he revives you, and you do your whole create a player, create an avatar kind of thing, as you do in Fallout. And leaving this kind of colony ship is kind of akin to leaving at the vault in Fallout, right? There are a lot of similarities here. This is an Obsidian developed game, and then obviously they worked on New Vegas, so they're familiar with Fallout for sure. But yeah, so you leave this colony ship and you're kind of like fish out of water a little bit. And at the beginning of the game, you're supposed to meet like this, like a Han Solo kind of character, like a scavenger, traitor kind of figure. And hilariously, your ship kind of lands on him and crushes him. So the person you're supposed to meet on this new planet,
you kill.
The person is going to be like your your partner, your kind of guide, you kill him right away. And so the first joke is that you get to kind of role play as that character you killed. Like, oh, I'm this guy. This is my and so you get his ship, right? That becomes your ship. It has a funny name, like the Lost or the Unknown or something like that. Or the unnamed or something like that. Anyway, you get his ship, and so you can kind of role play as him for a little bit. That joke or that instance of persists for like maybe half or more of the game, where you can just play as that character. You can tell everybody, oh yeah, I'm this guy, even though he doesn't exist anymore, because people are going to ask you, oh, where'd you get that ship, or you're so and so, right? We see the tags on your ship. We know it's supposed to be you, but you look different, or you're not him. So you get to do that a little bit, or you can kind of just fess up right away. Like, no, he died, or I crushed him or something like that. You can play it however you like. There's a lot of interesting role play in this game, and I think that's what really makes it appealing to me. It's a good one of those kind of more Western rather than or linear type of RPGs where you can kind of choose your own adventure a little bit here. And I love games like that. I love when, you know, in a game like Mass Effect or Skyrim, you get a choice to, you know, I'm going to choose these guys or these, or I'm going to solve the quest this way, right? Whether that's through going in guns blazing, like David probably wants to do, or swords out versus kind of just trying to talk your way through. What I really noticed or loved about this is that so many of your quests can be solved through talking, right? You can talk people down off of a variety of different situations just by, you know, having a charm score or an intimidation score high enough. And so I'm pumping stat points into the talking capabilities, those parameters, those perks, because it's you're able to use it so often. It's not a game where only like 10% of the time can you actually solve a situation through charming your way out of it. In this one, at least half of the game of the kind of scenarios you run into can be solved without violence, and I think that's fantastic. I think that just makes for a more enjoyable game. Like, so seldom did I feel that I was boxed into a corner and just had to shoot my way out. I loved that, you know, I can constantly tricking people or kind of convincing them using like logic to, like, you know, disarm them or to have them not come after me, you know, to let me into places I'm not supposed to be into. There are just so many situations where I'm making a compelling choice and being able to make it as a result of the talking options, the dialogue options, as opposed to needing to collect something or kill somebody or go somewhere. So often I could just like chat people up and solve my problems that way. So I really like that element in particular. What about the Outer Worlds? Kind of stuck with you, David.
Well, it's funny. I played the Outer Worlds in 2019 when it first came out. I got Game Pass for console, or not for console, for PC. And I got it to run on my PC. And yeah, it gave me those Fallout vibes right off the bat. I know one of the things that kind of annoyed me was that first of all, when you play a Fallout type game and you don't have the VAT system, it's kind of, I was like disappointed. I'm like, oh, I gotta like just manage to do my own shooting here. It's not quite as fun as the VAT system, but I really was digging the, like you said, the whole, there was a very robust conversation system where it was like, it seemed like, and you could pretty much talk with everybody. Like there was like when you crush that guy at the beginning, you're kind of outside of a town, and then you kind of go into town and there's all kinds of things going on. Like there's, I know, like you meet the mayor and they're like, if I'm remembering correctly, there was like this thing between the mayor and this, like, I think it was like a place that was creating electricity or something, and
they're like a camp trying to be like self-sustaining, right? Like they don't want to, they're like the opposite of so you've got the corporate town and then you've got like not rebels or something.
They were trying to live off grid or something. Yeah, that's like that. Yeah, the mayor wanted you to convince them that no, you know go. I think one of the options was like you could sabotage their area so that they couldn't, because they were living off grid. And I guess there was like, you could either sabotage it so they had to go back to the corporate system, because there's like a corporation that basically is like the galactic government from what I can remember.
And that's what he wants. The mayor wants you to sabotage their power so they come back, right?
Yeah. And then, but there's also an option where there's like, I think there's like some kind of machinery you can get for them, and then it would make them like completely off grid. They wouldn't have to rely on the corporation at all anymore. And then I think the mayor gets mad at you if you do that.
Yeah.
So it was nice where you're like getting into the game and it's like, there's already a bunch of different options right off the bat of like, how, you know, how am I going to proceed?
And totally, then, yeah. Just within the first hour, there's like a compelling main story quest that involves like choosing faction A or faction B. And you talk to the people and you're like, you know, they both have like compelling arguments. Again, there's a lot of gray in this game. It's not always like this one early on, maybe a little bit more like good versus evil, you know, corporation versus, the little guys.
Yeah.
But I think there are more of them that are nuanced, like where you can see both sides, and choosing one or the other isn't that simple a choice. If we're thinking about that moral decision making,
yeah. And then the thing, so here's the my biggest thing of this between Starfield is that Outer Worlds there's a very finite amount of places you can go. Like it's there's not very many places to go, but they're filled with content.
Yes,
which is like the exact opposite of Starfield. Of like, oh, there's like hundreds of places you can go, but they're empty. So that's why I prefer Outer Worlds to Starfield.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like you have like a star map and there's like 10 planets and they kind of open up, you know, one at a time. Like this isn't like it's not like a No Man's Sky or Starfield where it's, you know, there's 1,000 planets, you know, or some of them procedurally generated. These are all like, it's a very tailored experience, right? Like what you expect to find is going to be the same for everybody, but how you go through this, these Outer Worlds, how you go through the story, like that's obviously up to you. And I imagine that people world, have very different right? playthroughs.
No, isn't there like one, there's like one main, so the first place you land is like a planet and you can kind of do the things there. But then when you take your ship, I think you go to, I feel like there's like a main galactic area that you go to. Cause I remember like, that's where the guy with the moon head is.
You know what? And again, it's only been a few weeks since I finished this game. I would say that they didn't feel like a big hub world. There's a couple spaces that are larger than others, and there might be like areas we go to more often than others.
Maybe
planet kind of had like it kind of had like a city, and then like an outside the city area. You know, all the planets kind of had a similar environment to them or structure to them.
Yeah. Okay, maybe that's it. I know my problem with the game when it came out in 2019, which I think they fixed since now, is that the enemy AI was horrible.
Yeah.
Like, it was so easy to trick them. Like, I remember in that first, the first world that you went to, there's like the main city where there's the corporation, but then there's kind of like a ghost town outside of it.
That's right, yeah.
Where there's a bunch of like rebels or savages or something or whatever. And I remember there was like one big guy who had this like monster. I don't know if it was like a flamethrower or something, but he had some kind of weapon that would kill you like with one hit. So what I was doing was like he would chase me to a building and I would just run around the building. And like he was slower than me. So he could run around the building and shoot him from behind. And then he would turn around and then I'd just run around the building.
Yeah.
And then shoot him from behind. And then I just kept doing that until he was dead. And then I got like this bonanza of
weapons. Oh, that's awesome. Yeah.
And I'm just like, man, that was ridiculous. Like, you know, I can't believe the AI is this stupid. But
yeah, I think it's a little better now. I don't remember having to run people around. And in particular, the robots that you fight, the automatons, like they're really tough. Like you generally need to use like some kind of like electric or lightning kind of damage to do anything meaningful to them. Like if you just try to use standard bullets, you're going to have a bad time. At some point, I picked up kind of a plasma gun that used energy clips as ammo, and that was good for taking out humans and robots. So that was helpful. But before that point, I had a heck of a time just trying to get through some of the areas where they're patrolled by robots. And there's one early on that first planet where you have to, I think, the power plant that you need to break into and then choose who gets the electricity or who you're shutting it off for. That one is pretty heavily guarded by mostly robots, as opposed to the human kind of raider type characters. I think the enemy variety in general is lacking. I think that's probably one of my biggest knocks against the game is that you're basically fighting three types of things. You're fighting kind of human raiders, these kind of mutant creatures that look sort of like bugs slash crocodile kind of things, like almost a little bit like Starship Trooper type bugs.
Oh yeah,
you're fighting those ones, and there's a couple different sizes for them, and then just robots of a few different types. You know, the floating ones, the ones that kind of just kind of march along the ground. But yeah, not a lot of enemy variety. So to me, like, combat was a very small part of the game, which was why I was so happy to not have to do too much of it. Yeah. There is a sort of VAT system where you can slow down time. But it's very limited if you don't kind of level it up or buff it to give you a little bit more time with it. And it goes down so fast that it wasn't something I used very often.
It's almost more like Max Payne, like the Max Payne. Yeah, it's like
bullet time or something, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it totally is like that. An odd kind of replacement for VATS that probably didn't fit very well. I haven't read Impressions, but that was...
I would imagine that they would be like, you know, we can't copy VATS because it'll look ridiculous.
Yeah, exactly.
What else can we do is what I got from that slowdown system.
Yeah. Okay, so I think that probably take us to the end of our Outer Worlds discussion. You know, again, a game with a pretty compelling story and interesting side content to discover off the beaten path. I think it's definitely a game worth playing, especially if you have Game Pass. There's no reason not to. But even if you don't have Game Pass, I think this is one, if you can pick it up, you know, under $30 or $40 now, probably it is worth it. It's a good one. And there's a sequel coming out, which is another reason that kind of compelled me to want to play this game, is we know they're making a second one, and I'm curious how the second one's going to build on this first release. So,
mm-hmm.
Just a couple more games here. The next one I'm going to talk about, I don't think David's played yet, and I'm going to go through it pretty fast because it's a narrative game, right? It's a choose your own adventure type. There's
hard
no
to say too much.
No, very much so. It's one I definitely don't want to spoil because I think it's a good one. It's As Dusk Falls. I think it came out in 2022, maybe early 2023. So it's not an old game, but definitely, yeah, specifically a choose your own adventure type game. Very similar to, if anyone's played a Telltale game, like The Walking Dead, the Batman one, there's a Game of Thrones one, The Wolf Among Us, a lot of different Telltale games that they made. This is very much one of those. But it doesn't have the walking around kind of a point-and-click type adventure style gameplay. This is really, you're kind of watching a story unfold. There's not a ton of animation to it either. It kind of has this stilted, like, not stop motion, but you see kind of frames of an action rather than an entire sequence kind of play out. It'll kind of play out with a character will be in one spot, then a couple seconds later, they'll be, you know, a few steps ahead. And it kind of plays out like kind of almost like storyboarding or something like that, as if you were watching a making of documentary or
like
something.
Like the Max Payne cutscenes.
There you go. That's okay, so
two Max Payne references in one episode.
Yeah. Who would have known? And no Max Payne on Game Pass, I don't think, unfortunately.
No.
Maybe after this podcast. But yeah, the narrative is an interesting one. It starts off with you're this family and you are driving from one place to another. You're kind of trying to relocate the family, and you stop at a motel after you have some car trouble. Someone kind of runs you off the road and you need to get someone at the hotel to kind of tow your car back over there. You need a room for the night until you can get the car fixed. It's two parents, the grandfather and their young daughter. And as it turns out, that's one kind of perspective you play with. And then the other one is these three brothers who they need money for some reason, and they end up going to rob the sheriff. I guess they know that the sheriff's going to be out of town at an appointment. So they know he has money for some reason. So they or a safe or something. They've acquired that information from somebody, and so you break into his house, and you get the money, and then that part kind of ends, and then the two storylines kind of converge when, again, this is all very early on, first chapter kind of stuff. They converge when the brothers are kind of, I guess, making their escape, and they make their way to the hotel. Or the motel where the family from the first part of the game is staying. And they kind of, basically it becomes like a hostage situation where they've got guns drawn and they're kind of like holding out at the motel, taking all the workers at the motel and the family and a couple other people, taking them hostage. and the police end up getting to the hotel and kind of, you know, it's kind of a not a stakeout, but a stalemate between the two parties, what's going to happen. And all the while, you're kind of switching between the perspectives. You're playing as like the dad from the family, but you're also playing as the youngest brother on the vigilante or the criminal side. And so it's really interesting the way that you kind of switch between different perspectives, and the whole time you're kind of making choices and having to do kind of small actions to move the plot along. There's a lot of quick time events. And the funny thing is, like, some of the button pressing ones are really hard. And I'm jamming away, and I'm not as good at this as I used to be, but at 38 now, like I can still get most of them done if I work pretty hard at it. But some of them are really like, I missed them. I'm like, I'm wailing away on this Xbox controller, and I can't believe I still missed it. And then you realize that some of the ones that are, you have to really mash the button to succeed at, like maybe it's grabbing a key or staying quiet or something like that. You're activating some event, some sequence in the story. If you miss it, like that could be like character dies or not, you know, or you escape or not. Like something consequential can happen through missing one of those quick time events. So most of the quick time events are either just press a direction left or right or up or down, or just press a prompt, but just press a button once. But the jamming ones really got to me. So if that's not your cup of tea, you might not like As Dusk Falls. But across six chapters, and it was longer than I expected, it's a really compelling story. I love the way that it kind of, it doesn't maybe necessarily fully wrap up everything, but it does leave some stuff to your imagination, which I liked, how things wrap up. And maybe that changes because it's got this huge plot line, and you can kind of see what percentage of people, you know, went this direction, what percentage went another direction. You can see all the kind of events that you missed out on. Of course, you don't know what happens there. But you can see, like, you can go and you can actually jump back to spots in the timeline. It's a really cool system where you can jump back to a specific moment and replay that decision or replay that quick time event. So it was easy to see, like, oh, okay, I let this person get away. I'll just go back, I'll rewind it, and then you know, make a different decision to keep them with me or to tell the police about them or something like that. So, yeah, As Dusk Falls, I believe it's coming to other platforms this year or soon. Probably coming to Switch and PlayStation. I think it's Xbox PC exclusive right now, but it's a good one. If you like those kind of narrative heavy games with not a lot of gameplay and just the kind of quick time events, I think it's a really good one, actually, and a nice palate cleanser between action games for me.
Yeah, that one seems pretty good. I think I've downloaded it, but I haven't tried it yet. But yeah, it seems pretty neat.
Yeah, it's well worth a playthrough. I think that from like the opening hour, I was already hooked on at least seeing the first chapter through. Each chapter takes about an hour to 2 hours, depending on how slowly you go through it. Or sometimes you can take a little bit longer with some of the choices. There is a lot of timed things where it does kind of force you to make a choice quicker. And obviously the quick time events are all timed as well. So, but it has a lot of replay value in that you can go back and unlock different endings for characters and, you know, make different choices and see like how someone would react to a different tactic that you might take for the family or the criminals. And then other characters get introduced in later chapters too. So you get to play, you even do time jumps between like past and present. So you get to play as characters when they were younger and stuff like that too. But yeah, just a really good game that went places that I wasn't expecting and really got into it. So that's a clear recommendation for me, As Dusk Falls.
Yeah. Did you ever play Man of Medan?
A little bit. Yeah. So, those kind of, is it Supermassive that makes those horror games?
No, Man of Medan was made by Bandai Namco.
Oh, really? Okay. Maybe I'm thinking of something else.
Or at least I'm thinking of
the
guys that
did the cabin game with the teenagers. And they've done a bunch of those kind of choose your own adventure horror games since then.
Is it Supermassive? It's got to be, right? It is Supermassive.
They did all those kind of, they're all very similar, and it's, we've liked a bunch of them that we've played.
Yeah, because that, like, Man of Medan sounds, there's more, like, it's not a choose your own adventure in the sense that, like, your actions change the story considerably, sure. Because you can get like a number of different things. But in Man of Medan, there's like you're actually walking around a ship.
That's right.
So that would be the main difference there. But it was just the that whole just that process of like, oh, the story, like, you know, because there's quick time events in Man of Medan too, where it's like if you don't do the quick time, then like your character could die.
Yeah, and then you got to play as a different character, right? Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. No, we played a bunch of those ones. I think the first one, gosh, what is it?
Well, there's one called Little Hope.
Yeah.
That one was, I think that was some, they were in like a, I think a car breaks down on the side of the road and they're trying to like get out of a forest or something.
Yeah. Yeah. We haven't played that one. There's The Quarry, I think is their most recent one.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
It's the Dark Pictures and anthology. That's what kind of these games are branched under.
Until and I'm pretty Dawn, sure I played Man of Medan on Game Pass.
Oh, you did? Okay.
That's cool. Cause I didn't pay for it. Yeah. So I'm sure I played, it's not on there now. I just checked, but I'm almost positive that Man of Medan was on Game Pass.
Yeah, I would say look out for their games coming to Game Pass as well. I think they're all pretty good. They're more horror leaning, right? As Dusk Falls, not really a horror game. It is more of a. There are some thriller moments, but it's a drama for sure. The Until Dawn is the first game I remember playing of Supermassive. I don't know if that's their first game. I think it might have been PlayStation exclusive too. It's really good. We played that kind of, it's a perfect game to kind of get a group of friends together and all play it together, you know, and make the choices together and stuff like that. We like that kind of experience.
Yeah.
One more game for us. David's been playing a little bit more of this one. I've played these games, but I haven't played them on Game Pass. So David, take it away. What's the last one here for us?
Yeah, well, it was mostly just to let people know that Ace Attorney, the original Ace Attorney trilogy is available on Game Pass. This came, I think it was September, end of September last year, 2023, when it became. So I just wanted to point out that a lot of the times these games, like I said, they're on for a year. So if you ever wanted to get into the Ace Attorney trilogy, now's the time to do it if you got Game Pass. And I mean, it's fantastic. Like, it's basically like, if you haven't played an Ace Attorney, it's essentially like a detective visual novel, I guess. Like, you play as Phoenix Wright, you're a lawyer, and you're defending a client who's been in most cases, I think it's like unjustly arrested for murder or something. And you basically, as the defense lawyer, you're trying to figure out, okay, well, who actually done it? And so there's like you'll go to an area where it's like point and click, where you're like looking for clues, looking for things to help your client. And then it moves into the courtroom, where it's more of like a puzzle-y type discussion with characters, where there'll be a witness who will, that you'll be cross-examining, and then you kind of have to find the dialogue to order, I guess, to a certain extent of, okay, when do I object or when do I do this? And you're basically trying to uncover the truth of what happened in that particular court case. I believe like I said, it's a trilogy, but it's a long running story. Like it's all connected, and it all comes to a terrific conclusion at the end of the trilogy. And I played this with my daughter, and like, she's hooked on it. Like,
I can see that.
She's played the trilogy twice now.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
She's at that age where she can appreciate kind of what this game's doing.
Oh yeah. Just loves it. And then also we had to get a Crunchyroll membership a couple months, where she's like, cause there's I would say that the anime doesn't do the game justice. But if you've played the game and you kind of want to just see it again, sort of thing, it's kind of neat to watch there's two seasons of the anime, which kind of covers a lot of the stories, but not all of them. And then shows you the court cases, but like very, like it takes like maybe a 2 or 3 hour court case and makes it into 20 minutes or something, you know? So it's not quite the same, but pretty neat. And it's definitely worth playing if you've never played it. It's one of those, like, you know, must play games get thrown around a lot, but I mean, this is a must play trilogy. It's so good.
And I think that there are probably still people out there that think that the Ace Attorney games are Nintendo exclusives, but they haven't been for a little while. Capcom did start putting these games on in other places. So you can get them on Game Pass now and Xbox. In addition to, I think they're probably on PlayStation and Steam as well.
Yeah, I think they're everywhere. They're definitely on Steam. Like we played them a year or two ago on Switch, but yeah, now they're on Game Pass. So she actually downloaded them. She played them a second time on Game Pass last September when they came out, because she immediately downloaded them and just started playing through them again.
I love that. I love that she's getting into them, and all the more reason because later this month we've got the second trilogy, right? The Apollo Justice games, right? So four, basically Ace Attorney 4, 5, and 6 are also coming to a variety of platforms. So the second trilogy is on the horizon here. So
again, it's smart of. Why wouldn't Capcom take the Xbox money and have basically they're being paid to have an advertisement for more games that are coming
out? I don't know that the Apollo Justice trilogy is coming to Game Pass, but again, it's the same.
Game Pass, no.
Right? No, not yet anyways. Maybe down the line, but yeah. It's like the Yakuza situation we talked about earlier. He's bringing these earlier games. I've played Ace Attorney 1, 2, and 3. Loved it. I'm going to buy the second trilogy, obviously, because I love the first one so much. So it's smart of them to be doing this, releasing or offering the first game on Game Pass for a year, when within that year, sequels come out, right? That seems to be a winning formula for them.
Yeah.
But yeah, Ace Attorney Trilogy, obviously, we've talked about those games on the podcast before, too. So it's on Game Pass, check that out. We just wanted to kind of highlight a bunch of games on Game Pass that we've been playing recently, or that maybe people aren't sure. Maybe they're not in that ecosystem yet, or they're looking forward to it or something. Just a bunch of games that we've been playing recently. We want to do a part two, not today, obviously, but we want to do another episode where we kind of talk about some of the games we bounced off of. So we'll talk more about, and maybe we'll do more games a little bit more rapid fire style. Today we kind of dove into these ones a little bit more. But maybe we'll do a part two where we talk about some of the games we played on Game Pass that we didn't quite fall for or didn't end up going all the way through. Maybe just playing an hour or two of them before we bounced off. But that's another episode, another week. So stay tuned for something like that in the near future. But yeah, thanks everybody for joining us as we spend a whole episode talking about Game Pass. Kind of a theme episode, but a lot of different cool games to check out. I played Remnant 2 last night with a couple buddies. I think we're going to get into that. So might have some updates on Remnant 2 at some point. It's kind of a third-person shooter meets Dark Souls kind of experience. But I didn't even have a microphone, and my two friends did yesterday. So our multiplayer experience was not as good as it could have been. So I'm going to go invest in an Xbox headset, I think, this week.
I got one. It's good.
Yeah. Do you have the branded one?
It's not too expensive. I think I paid $100 for it.
Yeah, the prices seem reasonable.
It's pretty good. It's good quality.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to look into that one. And I think just because the Xbox doesn't play super nice with non-Xbox things, it seems like I tried doing Bluetooth or just, PC.
Well, the good thing, too, is really the headset plays nice with other things. Like I've hooked it up to my iPad and stuff. You can use it as a Bluetooth headset as well. So it's not just stuck to your Xbox.
Well, that's good. That makes me a little bit more open to picking up that version than if I can use it elsewhere. I'll look into the branded Xbox wireless one then.
Yep.
But yeah, thanks everybody for joining us. We're going to have episodes coming up soon, another Game Pass episode. We're going to have a discussion about there's some indie games on Steam we've been playing. We're hoping to do an episode on one or two of them soon. And then, of course, Infinite Wealth coming in the next couple of weeks as well. So some stuff to stay tuned for. But yeah, thanks everybody for joining us. Hope you have a great week ahead. And we'll talk to you again on the next episode of Thirsty Mage. Bye for now.
Bye.